expensive.
I'm sure he is, she said scornfully. But he's not a Green, is he?
No, I admitted with a little laugh. Definitely not a Green. She was headed for the galley, so I went along with her, smelly running suit and all. How well do you know my father? I asked, realizing as the words came out of my mouth that I was being just about as tactless as a Class A boor. She cast me a sidelong glance as we walked along the passageway.
I only met him once, with my mother.
Only once?
That was enough, more than enough.
The way she said it made me wonder what had happened. Father can be very suave and winning when he wants to be. He can also be demanding and vicious. From the ferocity of her mother's reaction, Father must have hit on Marguerite very blatantly. Although it had been refurbished along with the rest of the ship, Truax's galley looked scuffed and hard-used. No amount of spit and polish could make the dispenser's dulled, worn metal surfaces gleam like new again. Marguerite helped herself to a tall mug of fruit juice. No one was sitting at the tables, so I poured a chilled mug of the same for myself and went over to sit beside her. She didn't seem to mind the company. And what if she does, I told myself. I'm the owner of this vessel. This is my ship. I'll sit where I damned well want to. But I was glad she didn't get up and move away. So what do people call you, Marjorie?
Marguerite, she said stiffly.
Marguerite, nothing else?
That's the name my mother gave me.
I suppose she realized she was being curt, almost rude. Softening a little, she said,
I can't abide being called Marjorie or Margie.
And Maggie? She shuddered with distaste. I had to laugh. All right. Marguerite, then. I'm Van.
We talked,
mainly about politics. No further mention of my father. Marguerite was an ardent, dedicated Green, devoted to the ideals of stopping the Earth's warming by drastically changing society. Solar energy instead of fossil or nuclear fuels. Taxation to redistribute wealth and shrink the gap between rich and poor. Stronger international controls on trade and information commerce. I tried to make her see that nuclear power would help to wean the world off fossil fuels much better than solar energy possibly could. Especially with helium-3 for fusion generators, I told her with growing enthusiasm. We could triple the world's installed electrical power capacity and cut greenhouse emissions by 70% or more. She frowned slightly.
Your father has a monopoly on helium-3, doesn't he?
His corporation owns a large chunk of the helium mining operations on the moon. I wouldn't say he has a monopoly. Besides,
and he controls the lunar raw materials that are needed to build solar power satellites, doesn't he?
He doesn't control them. There's also Masterson Corporation and Astro Manufacturing. Marguerite shook her head.
Mr. Humphreys, your father is one of our most implacable enemies.
Yes, I know. And my name is Van. She nodded, and we continued talking. I forgot about my enzyme shot, forgot about Marguerite's hard-driving mother and Rodriguez and the rest of the crew. I even forgot about Gwyneth, living in my apartment in Barcelona. I was enjoying talking with Marguerite. As we chatted on, I commented on how strikingly she resembled her mother.
Why not? She asked very seriously. I'm a duplicate.
A clone?
With a brief dip of her chin, Marguerite said, Mother's always said she's never met a man she'd trust to father a child with her. So she cloned herself and had the embryo implanted in herself. 8.5 months later, I was born.
I shouldn't have felt as staggered as I did. Duplicates were nothing new. People had been cloning themselves here and there for years. The procedure was outlawed in many nations, and moralists railed against the supposed inhumanity of it. But here was a perfectly lovely, lively young woman who happened to be a clone of her mother. When did all that happen? I asked. Her eyes widened for a flash of a second, and I felt suddenly embarrassed. But Marguerite just laughed.
I haven't needed any rejuvenation treatments yet.
I mean, I suppose I was really wondering about your mother's age. My father's past 100, and I cursed myself for a fool even while my mouth blabbered on. I could easily look up their ages in the mission's dossiers. Marguerite let it pass, and our conversation drifted on, relaxed and friendly, until we began to talk about the mission.
Don't you think it's strange, Marguerite asked, that no human expedition was sent to Venus until your brother went?
The unmanned probes scoped out the planet pretty well. There's been no need for human missions.
Really?
Her brows hiked up.
I thought you were a planetary scientist. Aren't you curious about this planet?
Of course I am. I'll be running a series of seismic probes for Professor Greenbaum, you know.
No, I didn't know.
He has a theory about the planet's surface overturning, I explained. He thinks the surface will get so hot it'll begin to melt.
Fascinating, Margaret murmured.
I waved a hand in the air. It's not a very attractive planet.
Attractive?
She snapped.
Are we talking about exploring a world or starting a resort hotel?
I mean it's a hellhole. Hot enough to melt aluminum and all that.
But that's just what makes it so interesting. A planet almost the same size and mass as Earth, and yet with a totally different global environment. A runaway greenhouse effect. Where Earth's atmosphere cycles carbon dioxide, Venus cycles sulfur compounds. It's fascinating.
It's a desert world, I said. Utterly lifeless. There's nothing for a biologist to study.
Are you certain it's dead?
No water, I pointed out. Unbreathable atmosphere. It's hot and dead and dangerous.
On the surface, I grant you. But what about up in the clouds? The temperatures are cooler there. And there's something in those clouds that absorbs ultraviolet energy. Much the way chlorophyllic plants absorb infrared.
None of the probes ever found living organisms or even organic material. Nothing could live in temperatures more than twice as hot as boiling water.
Absence of proof, she said loftily, is not proof of absence.
Venus is dead, I insisted.
Is it? What about all that sulfur in the atmosphere? Sulfur's an important component in the Jovian biochemistry, isn't it? She demanded.
Well, perhaps so.
And sulfur metabolism was present in Earth's earliest organisms. It's present today in the hydrothermal vents at the bottom of the oceans.
Nonsense, I sputtered. Why is it that when you don't have any facts on your side, you tend to talk louder and solidify your position into concrete? Quite seriously, Marguerite asked.
Why do you suppose that there were more than a dozen missions to Venus before the year 2020, but since then hardly any?
I hadn't the foggiest notion, but I said, the earlier probes told us what we needed to know. Oh, I admit there are lots of unknowns remaining, but the planet's so terribly uninviting that no one even thought about sending out a human team.
Until your brother went.
Yes, I said, my insides suddenly clenching. Alex went.
We have permanent research stations on Mars and the Jupiter system, she went on, relentless, and mining operations in the asteroid belt. Yet nothing for Venus. Not even an orbiting observatory.
The scientific community lost interest in Venus, I said. It happens, with so much else to study.
The scientific community lost funding for Venus, Marguerite said firmly. Funding that came mainly from wealthy patrons of universities, such as your father.
He paid for my brother's expedition, I said.
No, he didn't. Your brother paid for his expedition out of his own funds.
I blinked with surprise. I hadn't known that. I had just assumed...
And your brother died on Venus.
Yes, I said, my guts churning. That's right.
Do you think the rumors are true, that your brother's craft was sabotaged?
I don't know. I felt perspiration beading on my brow and my upper lip. I was annoyed, irritated at the turn our conversation had taken.
They say your father didn't want his mission to succeed. They say your brother and he had a terrible argument about it.
I don't know, I repeated. I wasn't there.
Didn't your brother tell you about it?
Obviously not, I snapped. I realized that except for that last night in Connecticut, Alex had told me very little about his plans, his hopes, his fears. He'd been almost a stranger to me. My own brother. We might just as well have been born into two different families. Silence stretched between us uncomfortably. Then it was broken by the comm screen on the galley's bulkhead. It glowed orange and the communications computer's voice said, "Incoming message for Mr. Humphreys." "Display," I called out, glad for the interruption. Until I saw it was my father's face on the screen, larger than life. He was scowling with displeasure. "I've just found out where Fuchs is," he said without preamble. "He's registered his ship and planned trajectory with the IAA at last. He's heading for Venus, all right. The son of a bitch is on a high G burn that will put him in orbit around Venus days before you